98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up, 2 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, live from the Yachin Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Yo, Burnsy, what is going on?
Yo, I got a yo.
I was just talking about being at the Suns game last night, but he's like, I looked over and I saw you in the corner. I'm like, why are you here?
Yeah. You were wearing your Sunday best yesterday in here, and I thought, he's not dressed up because he's going to the Suns game, is he? Yes, he is.
It was bad news for the Cavs last night.
There's that. It was bad news
for the Cavs.
This is good news for Josh Jackson last night. God, that was one of the best games I've seen him play in a long time.
That was equivalent to an NIT team that they played last night.
Well,
my God.
Well, Suns don't have a ton to brag about
Dragan
either.
Dragan Bender had 12 points and 10 rebounds. He actually looked good.
They had lost, what, 6 straight going into that game?
The Suns did.
They ended a 6-game losing streak, so that was not exactly...
Cavs were not trying to win that game. I promise you that.
Exactly a premier matchup last night. But it was the first time, and I looked it up because somebody on Twitter asked me to, it was the first time since April 8th of a year ago that both the Diamondbacks and the Suns won on the same night. Not that there's a whole lot of overlap between the Suns and the Diamondbacks, but it was a full calendar year since the Suns and the D-backs both won a game in the same night. So it was just, it was heaven. Heaven if you're a local sports
fan. People come up with anything these days.
Pretty much. And then, you know, you had what happened with the Colorado Avalanche. They squeaked out a point in their game against the St. Louis Blues.
They pulled their goalie down 2-1, and they got the equalizer. Now, lucky for the Coyotes, they didn't win it in the overtime or the shootout, because that would have been it. I mean, that would have been good night. That would have been it. They would have been 3 points down with 3 to play, probably not able to overcome that. I don't think the point hurts them that bad. As long as the Coyotes win their final 3 games and Colorado loses one of their games to either Winnipeg, Edmonton, or San Jose, then they would win the tie. So they have to win all 3 games, and they have to hope that Colorado loses once. Colorado plays tonight. Colorado played last night. They played tonight against Edmonton, who played last night. But they're at home. But they did squeak out a point. The only way the point really hurts is if the Coyotes end up going to overtime or a shootout.
Right, and they only get 1 point or something along those lines, and then that allows Colorado. Because the Coyotes have a bunch of the tiebreakers right now.
They will win the tiebreaker. They will win the tiebreaker.
Let's tell you what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Going deep. Today's top story, Burns and Gambo.
Kyler Murray and the Raiders. Raiders are sitting there with the 4th pick. The Raiders have 3 picks in the first round and also a very good second round pick as well. And the Raiders, and you and I both read the same story today. We both got entirely different things out of it. What you got out of it was kind of Derek Carr and whether the Raiders are really committed to him. What I got out of it was this idea that if Oakland does indeed find a way to draft Kyler Murray in the first round of the NFL draft, boy, what a middle finger that is to the city of Oakland. Hey, we're leaving. We're taking the football team, and we're going to go to Las Vegas. Oh, and by the way, the guy you thought was going to be the center fielder for the local baseball team. We're taking him, too. Yeah. It'd be like if the Seattle Supersonics drafted Kevin Durant, played in Seattle for 1 year, but he was also going to be the center fielder for the Seattle Mariners. Yeah, we're taking him to Oklahoma City. Hope you don't mind. A very interesting speculation about Oakland and their level of interest in Kyler Murray after their private workout yesterday.
Yeah, there's no question. The word that I'm hearing after yesterday is that they are interested in Kyler Murray. They are interested in moving up to number one to get Kyler Murray. Now, whether they'll do it or not, they've got 3 first-round draft picks. They've got a lot of inventory. And then they could possibly move Carr. But my understanding is that they do like Murray. They would be willing to move up to number one to get him if number one is even available, which we don't know. But the Raiders are interested in Kyler Murray. I think they'd be ready to move on from David Carr at this point based on, new knowledge and information that I was able to wean between last night and this morning. So I think the Raiders are serious about Kyler Murray. I don't think there's any smokescreen. I think, they're in the same boat as the Cardinals are and really evaluating their current quarterback, Josh Rosen and David Carr, respectively, and just trying to figure out, is Kyler Murray a better fit? And I think the Raiders feel that he is a better fit. Now, the question is, can they get to number one to get him? they're not going to be able to sit there and get him at four. There's a lot of talk in just the papers out there, and I'm not buying any of this, that they might be able to get him at four. I just don't see that as a possibility. So if they want him and the Cardinals are willing to trade the pick, they're going to have to go up and get him.
Derek Carr, by the way.
What did I say?
David, twice.
Oh, Derek Carr.
But that's okay. We won't find you in the kangaroo court for that.
Derek Carr.
There was a David Carr. Yes, there was, and he got sacked 125 times in four games with the Houston Texans back in the day.
We have similar brains.
He probably thinks his name is Derek Carr, so it's
okay.
He's been hit so many times, he might be a little confused about things. Sam Mays was on this morning with Doug and Wolf. He's been on our station a few times, kind of in and around Kyler Murray's pro day back in Oklahoma. He does a radio show at 107.9 in Tulsa, former Oklahoma State All-American. And like I say, he's been on our radio station a couple of times. Here's what he said he heard about this private workout between Kyler Murray and the Raiders yesterday.
Apparently, his whiteboard time went about an hour and a half over what they thought it was going to. So his workout started late yesterday, but he did exactly what he always does and absolutely wowed everybody with the velocity, the whole nine yards. The kid is just the real deal. But I'm kind of really interested in knowing how that whiteboard went. Is it an hour and a half long because Gruden was just enamored with him, or was it an hour and a half long because Gruden just wasn't getting what he wanted from him, from everything that I, because, you know, this was the narrative coming into the combine this year. You know, how is Kyler Murray on the whiteboard? How is he?
So imagine he's supposed to start his workout on the field. It's delayed by 90 minutes because they're having either a great time or a horrible time inside on the whiteboard while Kyler Murray is trying to draw up plays for John Gruden. Sam Mays, again, thinks Gruden got his words giddy about what he saw about Kyler Murray.
I think John Gruden's the most passionate coach in the game. He loves it at every single level. I think he got giddy with Kyler Murray and sat there and just chatted it up for an extra hour and a half.
Yeah. All indications I'm getting are that they'd like to move up to number one and get him. Now, the question is number one available? Because it's, the only reason it's not available is if the Cardinals are sold that they have to take Murray or even Nick Bosa and that they don't want to move down to four. The good thing about moving down to four is that you could still get one of those three premier defensive linemen if you do trade.
Yes.
There are three premier defensive linemen that everybody's kind of singled out as these three guys are the studs of the draft. And if you move down just to four, you're going to get yourself one of those defensive linemen, and you're going to pick up a whole bunch of other picks so the Raiders can move up to get Murray. And my understanding is that the Raiders do like Murray. They would like to, you know, they are willing to move up to one to get him. Don't know if one's available. Can't tell you that right now. And then, you know, the Cardinals have to make their determination. I mean, you know, I am certain that Murray is way ahead of Haskins, Locke, and Jones in their evaluations. Way ahead. Like, not close. I'm sure the other three guys are closer. When you look at Haskins, Locke, and Jones, I think they probably rate similar. But Murray is head and shoulders above in any evaluation. So there is a lot of separation between Murray and the next best quarterback. A lot. So any talk we had in the past that Haskins would go be first, I mean, it's just not going to happen. The Cardinals are either going to take Murray, or I think they're going to trade the pick to somebody that's going to take Murray. And the Raiders are the first team that I know of that is willing to go up to number one.
There are charts, of course, that project draft value. You know, the number one pick is worth this, that, and this, plus this, that, and that next year, right? And so a lot of teams do stick to the chart. I do wonder, and I'm looking at the Oakland Raiders right now. Here is their draft inventory in 2019. They have the fourth pick. They have the 24th pick, they have the 27th pick, they have the 35th pick. Now, it's ludicrous to think you're going to get all three first-round picks from the Raiders for Kyler Murray. You're not getting all three.
No, because they have a lot of needs, too. They need pass rushers.
Right.
They need defensive help.
That's not going to match up with the chart. Okay, but could you get 4-27? Could you get 4-35 in the first round next year?
Yes.
Could you? I mean, you can start playing around with some of the numbers, and you can see that the Cardinals very easily could walk out of this thing if they want to deal with the Raiders with four of the top 35 picks in the draft, potentially. If they end up with the Raiders 4, let's say they end up with 27. No, it'd be three of the top 33. I'm sorry. So let's say they end up with two of their first round picks.
Yeah, three
this year.
Of the top 33.
Three of the top 33 picks.
So you get yourself a defensive, you get yourself defensive lineman,
wide receiver,
you get yourself a wide receiver,
cornerback if you want,
an offensive lineman.
Oh, there's so many things you could do if you had that extra pick.
Sure.
If you wanted to, I guess the question is, if the Raiders are really that hot to trot, if they're smitten, if they're in love with Kyler Murray, and I agree with you, there's no way they can just sit there at four and get him. That's just not going to happen. If they're so smitten, how much are they willing to spend beyond the value chart to get number one? And is that pick even for sale? Are the Cardinals so smitten with Kyler Murray, hypothetically, that they wouldn't even want to make a deal here? Or are the Cardinals looking at this as, hey, our love has a price tag, and at some point, you, the Oakland Raiders, have the opportunity to exceed the price tag of our love for Kyler Murray. You've got the picks, you've got the inventory, you've got the stuff. Make me fall out of love with Kyler Murray. Give me a reason to fall out of love with Kyler Murray.
And that might be hard.
It might be.
Because if you are in love with him,
then nothing can shake that. No, and you're right.
If you say there's a price for everything, in this case, there literally may not be.
There might not be.
There may not be.
If you are absolutely sure, 110%, that Kyler Murray is the quarterback of your future, all the draft picks in the world shouldn't be able to sway you from that.
And it's It's the rare occasion when there isn't a price for everything. It's the rare occasion. Everything's for sale. Everything's available, right? There's always a price, right? There's got to be a price. This might be the rare occasion. If you think that highly of the kid, I just can't do it. They're offering me two first-round picks this year, I just can't do it.
Yep.
I can't pass on this kid. This kid's too special.
You control the whole process if you're the Cardinals.
Yeah.
You're not dependent on anybody else to pick the guy you want. You don't need to trade. You don't need to move up. You don't need to move around. You can just sit there and take the guy you love. How strong is your love? How strong is your love for Kyler Murray? If you're the Arizona Cardinals, it's going to be a lot of fun to see. But the Raiders popping up as this potential team, that's become a thing now. That's become a real thing. To the point where somebody actually snapped a photo of John Gruden. Did I send you this in the email?
No. Well, you might have.
I'll show it to you.
Yeah.
It's a picture of John Gruden, and it looks like he's waiting by baggage claim for his bag to come out of the chute.
Okay.
Somebody zoomed in. He has got an Oakland A's hat looped around his backpack. And it looks like it's been autographed on the bill. So he might have gotten Kyler Murray to autograph an A's hat on his way out the door. I'll show you the picture during the break.
He's infatuated.
He might be.
His puppy love.
He might be.
Gruden and Kyler Murray.
It's quite possible. It's an all-day ticket window Tuesday. We've got information coming up on that. But when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, one series into the season, and the Diamondbacks had their issues up and down that roster, but all it took was one game to turn that feeling around. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.
D-backs Ticket Window Tuesday opens.
Back she goes, and it is gone!
Now.
Gambo, I need a caller number for you so we can give away tickets to go see the Arizona Diamondbacks against your favorite team, the Boston Red Sox, the one your son plays for, by the way.
What number is John Duplantier?
I'm terrible with that. Was he 13? I'm trying to remember my mental picture from last night of him pitching.
Anybody know?
78?
Jeez,
we're not doing that. 7 plus 8. That's a lot of callers.
That's a lot of calls.
He's 57.
57.
All right, 5 plus 7 is 12.
There you go. Caller number 12.
Number 12.
It's Ticket Window Tuesday brought to you by Arizona Central Credit Union. Caller number 12 at
602. To go see the Communists play the Diamondbacks.
602-260-9870. You'll score tickets to go see the D-backs and the Red Sox this Friday in the home opener. You'll also score a copy of MLB The Show on PS4. If you're not a winner now, listen every hour today for your next chance to win. Again, that is caller number 12 at 602-260-9870, and you'll win a pair of tickets to go see the D-backs and the Red Sox and the Arizona Diamondbacks.
And all is right with the D-backs again. All is right. I mean, the world is okay. Back to normal. Went out there and kicked the Padres' asses last night. Offense continued to roll. But the story of last night's game was obviously Merrill Kelly. First D-back to win his major league debut since Zach Godley in 2015. And then, of course, John Duplantier, the second D-back to earn the save in his major league debut. Bong Young Kim did it as well. So those guys were the story last night. Merrill Kelly, first major league start, goes out there, pitches a really good game. I mean, he was very good until he gave up that gigantic home run to Fernando Tatis.
That ball got out in about a half second.
Yeah, I'm waiting for it to land in Arizona at some point, man. He clobbered that thing. He just clocked it. But he pitched a good game. He did a good, and Duplantier comes in, gives the rest of the bullpen the night off. He pitches two really good innings. Fastball looked live. He had some movement on it. Mm-hmm. Pitched a good game. And then, you know, like we said, the offense, what I liked about the offensive explosion last night, 15 hits in the game. And everybody was hitting. Like, everybody got hits. Adam Jones, Peralta, Escobar, Avila. I mean, everybody. Ahmed, Lamb came up as a pinch hitter and dropped an RBI single in there. Everybody was hitting. Christian Walker had two more hits.
Yep.
I mean, the only guy that didn't get a hit out of the starters was Carson Kelly. So, great game overall. Offense was fantastic. Got a quality start out of your pitcher. You had a new guy come in and give you a couple innings out of the bullpen. Terrific game for the D-backs.
Yeah, it's funny. I watched that game, and didn't you get the impression when it was all said and done that even though Merrill Kelly was the guy who went six innings and he was making his major league debut, that Duplantier in many ways was much more the story? Probably because of his pedigree in the Diamondback system, right? Probably because of how highly thought of he is in the Diamondback system. I got the impression that he was, that afterwards it was almost like Duplantier was more of the story than Merrill Kelly was.
Well, let's take a step back. You remember when I reported last year that the Diamondbacks would not include John Duplantier in any trade for Manny Machado? The Diamondbacks were reeling. They were in first place almost every month, and they were desperate to add, you know, some help. And there was some thought that could they get Manny Machado as a rental, but it would cost Duplantier. And I reported at the time that the Diamondbacks were not willing to put John Duplantier in any deal for Manny Machado. They kicked the tires on Machado, but they didn't get him because they weren't willing to put in Duplantier. You were happy about it because you don't want to give up a top prospect. You didn't want to
not
give
a
up
top a pitching prospect.
A top pitching prospect for
I've
a guy who was a rental.
I've seen this organization do that way too many times, and all you have to do is watch Max Scherzer dominate or Trevor Bauer dominate.
By the way, just real quick, I watched Trevor Bauer's first start. Oh, my God.
Oh, he was magnificent.
Oh, my God.
He's adding pitches. I think he added a changeup or a slider this year? Whichever one he doesn't throw, he added this offseason.
Nobody.
It's devastating.
Nobody in baseball makes the ball move the way he does. Nobody.
He is addicted to his craft. Absolutely addicted to it. And you're right. And Duplantier, so that was my thing. If you self-analyzed, if you're the Diamondbacks and you look at Duplantier and go, he's a fifth starter in this league, then trade him. But if you think he's got the potential to be a one, and I'm going to couch this a little bit, or a two.
They more of a three.
Okay, but even then,
maybe a four.
You can't go giving away pitching prospects. Here is why I think Duplantier was more the story last night. We all know the Diamondbacks farm system has some kids that are coming, but they're still a couple years away. Right? They're the Jazz Chisholms of the world, the Dalton Varshows of the world. They're still a couple years away. Duplantier is like the first of that wave to come because he's a little ahead of
those guys. Totally agree.
He's kind of the bridge. Okay? Duplantier can be sort of the bridge from the Diamondbacks of old, the Paul Goldschmidt, AJ Pollock, Patrick Corbin Diamondbacks, to the new Diamondbacks a few years from now when all of these stud prospects eventually get here and Hazen can do whatever he wants with them. Duplantier is kind of the one guy,
because he's 24,
who's ready now to contribute at this level in some way.
Pitched in Double A, 24 years old.
Yep.
You're totally right.
And so he can bridge the gap between the then and the later in kind of the now. That and the fact the Diamondbacks needed him so badly in last night's game, given the state of their bullpen. I mean, to be able to get all 27 outs from two guys, given all the crap that went on in Los Angeles with the bullpen.
18 and a third innings out of the bullpen.
J.R. Murphy and all that stuff. I mean, he played a huge role. And it was an emotional moment for him,
too. I like your point. The Diamondbacks' top prospect is regarded Christian Robinson. He's 18 years old. Chisholm is 21 years old. Varsho's 22 years old. Andy Yerzy, the catcher, is 20 years old. Jake McCarthy, the outfielder, 21. Alec Thomas, 18. So you start to look at the top seven prospects. They're all kids except for Duplantier, who's the number two prospect in their organization. He's pitched at Double A. He's 24 years old. So that, you're right. He's the one guy that's kind of, you know, there now.
Yes.
Taylor Wagner as well is 24. But he's one of the few guys that's ready to help you now if need be.
Yeah. After the game, Duplantier said it was just an unbelievable feeling.
Unbelievable. I don't think that I thought anything but trying to think the thoughts that were happening out there. You know, the last 36 hours have been a whirlwind for me, so I'm just happy to be here. And hope got to save out the game for the squad, so that was awesome. Merrill pitched a great game, so I was just kind of happy to come in and kind of piggyback off that.
Troy Lovello said he had fun watching both of those guys on the mound.
It was really fun for us to watch. And it was a special day. It was a special day for him and John. Two guys making their major league debut and never suspected it by their mound presence, their poise, and their ability to attack hitters.
First time since the save rule was created in 1969 that two pitchers who both made their debut in the same game, one got the win, one got the save. What you saw, that's, and if in my Tim Kurkjian voice, that's baseball.
That's
fellas.
Baseball.
That's what we love about this game.
First
you always see something you've never seen before.
1969.
First time since the save rule was ever created, right?
Yeah.
That two pitchers making their debut in the same game, one got the win, one got the save. Never saw something like that before. So it was fun. It was needed. It was nice to see the offense bop the ball around. I double checked.
Merrill Kelly said this after the game. Like, it was nice to have that big cushion because then I was able to relax and throw my pitches because the offense just, it was an explosion. Adam Jones has been terrific for this team.
Well, not in defense, not defensively the other night when he bobbled that ball
bobbled
against
that
Los
ball
Angeles.
And it allowed AJ to go to third base. I don't, but offensively, he's been sensational.
He has. Look, the sneaky thing about this team so far, they're averaging about 6.5 runs per game so far this
offense
season.
Offense has been good.
I would not have expected that 5 games into the season. That I did not see coming. 6.4 runs per game with this lineup, with the guys they're trotting out there on a daily basis.
Right.
I don't know if you can expect that, count on that, but early in the season, if you're going for pleasant surprises for the Arizona Diamondbacks, that's a pleasant surprise for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah. Listen, if this offense can, they'll win games with their offense. Okay, they'll win games, but it was nice to get a quality start out of a pitcher last night.
The new guys settled down the pitching staff last night, but with the offense breaking through as well, does Troy Lovello have a decision to make at first base? We'll ask the Diamondbacks manager that question next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Let's get an update on let's introduce our Twitter poll question of the day. And for that, it's kind of based off of a mock draft you saw earlier about Zion Williamson.
Zion 1 and Ja 2. Knicks get Zion and the Suns get Ja.
So with that, let's turn it over to Sarah Cazell with our Twitter poll question of the day.
All right, fellas. If the Suns walk out of the NBA draft with Ja Morant, are you happy? And I'm actually pretty surprised how many people said yes. Right now, 69% of our voters said yes, very happy if we get Ja Morant. 22% said nope, I want Zion. And 9% said trade the pick.
You know what's funny? I got together with a friend on Saturday night, and I was trying to explain to him that even if the Suns finish with one of the three worst records in the league, which they will, and a 14% of the number one pick, which they will, where they fall in the lottery still matters. Where their record is still matters because of how far they can fall in the draft.
Right.
The team with the second worst record, I believe, can end up with the sixth pick overall in the NBA draft.
Yeah, that's why you got to stay. Yeah, I mean, the worse you are, the less chance you have of falling.
Yep.
That's what the whole lottery was set up for. You could fall. I mean, you could fall out of the top five, if you're the second pick
in
the draft.
Just because you're one of the three worst records, and just because you have a 14% chance of the number one pick, if you have the third worst record, you can fall all the way to seven.
All right, so discuss this for a second. You don't get Zion, you have the number two pick. Do you trade it, or do you take Ja Morant and hope that you have a future franchise point guard, but noticing that it may take a couple of years for him to actually develop?
You going to hate me if I say trade it?
No, not at all.
I'd probably trade it. I understand Ja Morant makes your jaw drop. I'd probably trade it. I'm tired of 19-year-olds.
Depends what you can get, obviously. Depends on what you can get. What would you do? I would look to trade the pick to see if I could get somebody that could help me now that fits into my timeline. I'm not trading it for a 31-year-old point guard.
Oh, no. I'm not doing that.
I mean, I would trade it if I could get a 25-year-old, 26-year-old in his prime.
Yeah.
There aren't many players I would trade it, but I would also, if I can't get a really, really good deal, then I'll just take Ja Morant, get a veteran point guard to run the show, and have Ja come off the bench, and then I'm done with Elie Okobo and DeAnthony Melton to give me my third point guard.
Suns did win last night. They beat the Cleveland Cavaliers.
It was bad news for the Cavs.
It sure was. It was great news for Josh Jackson. That was a great game out of Josh Jackson, and it was nice to see Devin Booker play the role of the facilitator and play it very well. He you know, that 59 points, 50 points, 48 points, very modest night for Devin Booker with scoring, but the assists were fantastic, and boy, he got a lot of help. What, they have four players with double-doubles last night?
Yes.
Rashawn Holmes had one. Josh Jackson had one.
Bender had one.
12
points and 10 rebounds.
Miracle. And then, of course, Devin Booker had it with the points and the assists.
Yeah, and then you just look at Jamal Crawford was able to score 19 points. Look, you were playing a team. I mean, that team was god-awful. I mean, that team was just terrible. Marquise Chris and Brandon Knight. And, you know, Sexton's going to be a talented kid. But there's no talent there. That team... The Bulls had won, so they had known they won, so they were trying to lose. Like, Cleveland was literally trying to lose that. They weren't trying to win that game, I'll tell you that. They weren't trying to win. But that was a really bad lineup. But the Suns, listen, overall, Suns played well, and it is good to win some games.
Your exclusive home of the D-backs.
Diamondbacks.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. D-backs manager Tori Lavello joins Burns and Gambo to talk D-backs baseball. Presented by the Negrete Law Firm. For an experienced personal injury attorney, contact us at azhometownlawfirm.com.
Fresh off the win over the San Diego Padres last night, 10-3. The manager of the Diamondbacks, Tori Lavello, joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline. Good afternoon, Tori, and congrats on the win last night. That looked fun.
Dave and John, it's always good to be with you guys. And, yeah, it was a special night last night. I'll tell you what, we lost a really, really tough game on Sunday. You don't plan for those types of things, especially early in the year. But we felt like we had that game won, and it didn't go our way. But I was proud of the way the boys came out yesterday, ready to go.
Yeah, you didn't play very well against the Dodgers, but you could have split. You had Hirano on the mound in the eighth inning, you know, with the lead. You had battled back from down 4-0 to get – and then, you know, defense fell apart. I mean, Nick made an error, and then Adam Jones made an error, and it was an infield single. And a ball that went over to, just didn't catch any breaks. I mean, you didn't get any breaks that inning. And some of the mistakes you made, you know, were your own cause. But you did have a chance to win that game with Hirano on a mound in the eighth and split the series.
I totally agree. It's a great observation. We couldn't have played any worse. Let's put it that way. In several of the game, several innings of the two games that we lost, but you know, we jumped on him for seven runs, and Buehler is a great pitcher. He just was running out of steam. We took advantage of him. We ended up getting a lead and holding on to that lead. But yeah, there were a couple plays on defense that normally we make. Two guys that make great plays for us all have made great plays for us all spring training, and Nick wins a Gold Glove that led to a couple of unfortunate situations where we gave up some runs, and they didn't hit the ball particularly hard, and they found the right spots, and sometimes in this game that's what it takes. It was really, really unfortunate. It was a hard way to lose the game, especially with it being that late, but overall we didn't play that well. We didn't play Diamondback baseball. I think we were a little bit nervous with the start of the season, the typical anxiety that goes along with the beginning of the season. We'll work our way into playing that type of baseball all year round that we got used to seeing last year and the year before. We believe in ourselves. It's just going to take a little bit of time to get to that point.
With the call-up of Duplantier, and I want to ask you about him in a minute, but it does set up this interesting dynamic now where you did have Jake Lamb taking some ground balls at third base. It's obviously his natural position. Mm-hmm. Christian Walker had another double last night. I know if you haven't already been asked this, you're going to be asked this by their beat writers. If you haven't addressed it a couple times already, is there a plan in place for you to figure out a way to get Lamb and Walker in the lineup at the same time? And is that plan having Lamb go back to third base?
At times it could be. And I know that I made some statements towards the end of spring training and maybe the beginning of the year where somebody asked that exact question. And I said that we were going to rotate Jake over to third base towards the end of spring training, maybe get him some innings over there, a couple looks. But he got a little banged up, so we had to pull back on that plan. And then I didn't want to put Jake in an uncomfortable situation, especially given the time that he had missed and the anxiousness and excitement he's going to be feeling by playing several of the games early in the year. I didn't feel like it was fair to ask him to do that. And I wanted to get him some reps and some practice reps and get him into a game after that. So yesterday he did start to take some ground balls, but that was part of the game plan. And yeah, we will have to be creative. You know, Escobar is a really good player. He just unfortunately hasn't been swinging the bat that well. So we have to be as creative as possible if we want to get the right guys with the right matchups. But it's something that we're thinking about for sure. We want to get the best bats in combination with the best players, in combination with the best defenders to help us win as many games as possible. It's a simple equation. And sometimes that will have Jake Lamb over at third base.
It's so early. Is Christian Walker kind of forcing your hand on this one?
a little bit. And he may be a surprise to the rest of the league, but not to us. He's been doing this in the minor leagues for the past couple of years. There's been some spurts of it when he comes up to the big leagues. And you know, when you have a young player that comes up and has to perform in order to stay, you feel like you got to go five for four, right? You get five hits and four at-bats. It's impossible. And that's just the mentality that you feel when you are injected into a lineup and you know that you're here for a short period of time. So he's here to stay now. He knows that he's made the team and he's going to be counted on, and he's in a little bit better space. So we love what we've seen out of Christian Walker. He deserves these opportunities, but he's swinging the bat extremely well. And yes, I have some difficult decisions to make as a manager, and Christian Walker is finding his way into the playing time against left-handed pitching, and he deserves that.
Well, I think the other thing, and we were discussing this yesterday, but what could this guy do if he got regular bats? He's never gotten regular bats in the major leagues. It's, you know, play one day and then sit four or five, come in as a pinch hitter, then sit four or five and then play. And then you go look at his career, that's what it's been. Anytime he's been in a major league, I wonder what he could do with 400 plus at bats. I wonder if he could be a guy that, you know, that gives you, you know, 25 to 30 home runs and knocks in 80 plus runs. It, you know, we don't know now, but he seems like he's got the potential.
Very fair question, and those are the questions that I ask the staff all the time. We go over every scenario, and those are just great baseball conversations that we end up having, you know, during a game when it gets a little slow, or inside of the walls of our clubhouse when we're just talking shop pre or post game. We love talking that type of baseball, and it's such a valid question because you just don't know. But there are many that feel that if he were given a lot of at-bats that he could have a very productive year. And it's not an accident that he's done it in the minor leagues over the past couple of years. Last year wasn't as good as 17 because we held him up in the big leagues a little bit and maybe didn't allow him to have the type of year he could have had in the minor leagues, but we know he's capable of it. And it's a mindset. He believes he's a slugger. He believes he's a hitter. He wants to be in the middle of everything, and he's earned that right. He's shown us so far this year that he could have a very, very good season if we give him a full number of at-bats.
Torrey Lovello, the D-back skipper, joins us on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Look, I don't like this. I know you don't like it, but early in the season, you went to John Ryan Murphy to pitch two innings to try to save your bullpen. I know it was embarrassing. I mean, they scored 7-8 runs. They were pounding the ball all over the place. He's throwing the ball 50 miles per hour. Just give me your thought process, Enrique, because nobody here, I mean, all of our shows, we all talked about it, and nobody wants to see that because it's not real baseball. Give me your reasoning as to why you did that this early in the season.
Yeah, just for the record, I'm not a big fan of it whatsoever. But what he did was preserve the bullpen for us to fight another day. I felt like whoever we used in game three would be unavailable in game four. So at a certain point, once the score got to, I think, 7 or 8 runs, or maybe even 9 runs, we made the decision that we were gonna punt on that game, on that day, and preserve the bullpen for the next day. We had some options to use Yoan Lopez. In fact, the score was starting to get to that point where we would have used him had it got to be, I think, what, 9-5 is what was my cutoff. We would have maneuvered to Yoan to probably put up a 4 spot in the top of the ninth inning, or hopefully put up a 4 spot in the top of the ninth inning. But as we were discussing it inside of the dugout, we just felt like, and it was actually discussions that we had pregame as well, because we thought something like that could happen. We were in that position because the starting pitchers were not giving us the length that they needed to, and our two long men were gassed, and we were asking a little bit more of them, in one case with Matt Cook. And we just didn't want to put anybody in the wrong position, A, to get him hurt in Matt Cook's situation, or B, ask him to pitch on back-to-back days if we wanted to win on Sunday. We had to kind of punt and preserve, and that was my mindset.
Torrey, leave me with this. John Duplantier, you bring him up. He gives you two terrific innings last night. Again, much needed because the bullpen had thrown 18 and a third innings. But what is the plan for him right now? I mean, is he just stopgap guy just for a couple of games and then back down to the minors? Or is there a chance that if he pitches well that he could stay?
Well, fair question. I mean, he threw the heck out of the ball yesterday. He gets a 3-inning save in his major league debut. It was a fantastic effort, and player development has done such a good job in pushing him to that moment. And Dupe earned it. He did it and went out there on his own and did it all by himself. So, a proud moment for all of us. We haven't yet quite figured out what that game plan is, but you know, he was brought here to to throw those types of innings to give the bullpen a little bit of a blow. And I think I made the comment to allow us to get caught up or get stable down there. He did that yesterday. So where that lands him in the coming days, we're not sure. But we love what we see. He did exactly what he was supposed to do yesterday.
Jory, as always, we appreciate the time. Thanks for coming by for a few minutes. Good luck tonight. We'll talk to you in a week, and we'll see you on opening day at Chase Field on Friday.
Okay, boys. Sounds good. Talk to you later.
Troy Lovello, manager of the Diamondbacks, joining us. Coulter Automotive Group, Sportsline, Coulter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Same two teams, D-backs, Padres tonight. 7:10 first pitch. Zach Greinke on the bump, trying to rectify his first start of the season tonight. Be looking forward to see that. The Coyotes have been looking up at Colorado in the playoff standings for a few weeks, but if things play out the right way tonight, that could all change. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Big night in the NHL for the Arizona Coyotes. Colorado's got 86 points. The Coyotes have 84 points. Both are in action tonight, and both are playing what is the verifiable cupcake left on their schedule. Now, what we don't know, and the point that you've made for the last 24 hours, is just how hard these other teams on their schedule are going to play the remainder of the season, right?
Sure.
But if you look at the standings and the points, tonight the Coyotes are hosting the LA Kings. Tonight Colorado is hosting the Edmonton Oilers. Those are the last two, quote-unquote, easy games left on the schedule for each team based off of the points that LA and Edmonton have.
Edmonton got officially eliminated last night. But they kind of knew before that because Ken Hitchcock, the head coach, shuffled his lineup. He went with younger players. So he might, you know, he might do that. He might, even against Colorado tonight, he might go with younger players. They haven't had good goaltending. Colorado's home, but they both played last night. Edmonton played at Vegas. Colorado played at St. Louis. So both teams played on the road, now have to travel back to Colorado and play. Coyotes take on a Kings team that got slaughtered by Calgary. They're no good. I mean, that's the biggest cupcake in the room is the Kings. That's the biggest cupcake on anybody's schedule. This should be an easy no-brainer win, but you still got to play the game. You never know. Sometimes these young players fight for, you know, fight for ice time. They fight for a job next year. You would expect that the Coyotes will take care of the Kings easily tonight, and you would think that Colorado should be able to get by Edmonton. They'll be a little bit down, but Edmonton still has the better players. I mean, Edmonton has, you know, talent on that team. They've got Connor McDavid, who's been fantastic. They've got a couple of really good players, but they don't have a lot of depth and they're not getting good goaltending.
Yeah, just keep in mind, when I say that, I'm just looking at the points. Edmonton has 77. That's the seventh worst in the wild card race. LA's got 67. That's the ninth worst. Then after that, when you get beyond tonight's two games, now the Coyotes after that play Vegas. They have 93 points. Winnipeg, they have 96. Colorado after tonight plays Winnipeg. They have 96. San Jose, they have 97.
Yeah, Winnipeg's still playing for something right now, trying to hold off St. Louis. And, you know, San Jose doesn't have anything to play for. Vegas doesn't have anything to play for. So each team plays two teams with nothing to play for, and each team plays right now a team that has something to play for, but not like life or death, but they have something to play for. You know, the thing with Edmonton is that they have Connor McDavid. He's got 115 points. He's got 41 goals. I mean, if he has a good game tonight, I mean, they can win. Colorado squeaked out a point last night. Mm-hmm. Got a man advantage. They pulled the goalie. It was down 2-1. They got the tire. Now, lucky for the Coyotes, they didn't win it in overtime. They didn't win it in a shootout because 2 points, getting up by three with three remaining, that would have been extremely difficult. And then I was going through all the tiebreaker situations last night with, you know, people that work for the Coyotes. And finally, I mean, after we were able to figure out, like, it's if they end up tied and they have the same ROWs, regulation overtime wins, the Coyotes would own the tiebreaker, because they got more points in the last two games head-to-head against Colorado than Colorado got against them. So Colorado has to finish at least a point ahead of Arizona. They can't finish tied because a tie would go to the Coyotes in the tiebreaker.
Yeah, the ROW is the second tiebreaker. Both have 34 points. The third tiebreaker is the head-to-head points against each other, excluding the first home game of the series because they play an odd number of games. The Coyotes have the tiebreaker there.
So the Coyotes can't win in a shootout here. Like, you can't play the Kings and win in a shootout.
Right. So if you finish,
you lose an ROW.
And that's what you want to make sure here is that you don't want to have to go back up to the second tiebreaker. You want to maintain that third tiebreaker because you have that advantage in that third tiebreaker. Then it would nullify the fourth tiebreaker. The one thing about tonight that I find interesting, and not that I'm worried about the Kings, it's just, boy, you never know with a team, you know, when you see that one kind of glaringly bad team on your schedule, you don't want to let up. You don't try to let up. Sometimes it just sort of happens that way. The one thing I'll say, out of these four teams, three of them all played last night. The Coyotes were the only ones who didn't.
Yeah, they rested.
L.A. played last night. Edmonton played last night. Colorado played last night. They all had to get on a plane. They all had to fly somewhere.
Season. L.A. just wants the season to end. Brown, Kopitar, yep. Like, you might have some guys playing hard. But I just, this should be, you would expect that the Coyotes should be able to handle this one. Then the next two games, you know, you're playing teams with talent, but, you know, what are they playing for? Look, if both of these teams win all three, I don't think both teams go 3-0. I mean, but that's like, you know, right now, but that the Coyotes are thinking we have to go 3-0. And Colorado's thinking the same thing. You can't go 2-1 because if the Coyotes go 3-0, you lose.
Right.
So both teams right now are like, we have to win all three games. We have to get 6 points.
The Arizona Cardinals are on the clock with the number one overall pick in this year's NFL draft. You could be there to experience history. Text the word clock. It's a 620-620 for your chance to win a trip for two to Nashville for the Cardinals On the Clock Ultimate Draft Experience, and it's courtesy of Cherish all-natural 100% cherry juice. If the Cardinals are truly going to trade Josh Rosen, there was, well, actually a couple reports today that could give them some leverage in making a deal. We'll explain next on the Burns and Gambo Show.